Let me shift to some items coming out of our newsroom once again. Like many rural towns, Port Orford on Oregon's south coast has struggled with shifting economic tides. The port of Port Orford has long been a key economic driver in the town, providing essential infrastructure to the local commercial fishing fleet. But the decrepit wooden building which houses much of that infrastructure won't last much longer. Now, as JPR's Liam Moriarty reports, many people in town are pinning their hopes for Port Orford's renewal on an ambitious replacement project which would take the port in new directions.
Steve Courtier opens the padlock on a large, battered wooden door at the port of Port Orford.
So this is the monstrosity that we're trying to get rid of. And
yeah, I was going to say, no offense, Steve, but this place is a wreck.
Yeah.
Courtier is the port manager. Inside the cavernous wooden structure is a collection of huge plastic fish tanks connected to pumps and coolers. Turns out Port Orford has the largest live fish fishery on the West Coast.
All these fishermen go out here and they catch live fish, the lingcod, the blacks, the chinas, all of them are live. And there's a huge market for that down in San Francisco.
These tanks hold the fish until they're delivered alive, typically to high-end Asian restaurants. This operation is run by the Oakland-based NorCal Seafoods, which buys the fish. But Courtier says in its heyday, this old whitewashed building housed a bustling cannery.
This was all chock full of steamers and women with these giant long tables, and they were shucking crab, and they'd have these giant boilers that would boil the crab and can it all right here.
Many decades later, the place is clearly on its last legs. The roof sags, insulation hangs from the ceiling, and Courtier says the port's job number one is replacing the thing with a larger, more modern facility. NorCal Seafoods would remain the anchor tenant. The Oregon State University field station just up the hill wants space for a wet lab for marine research. The local kayak tour outfitter is interested. There's talk of a fresh fish market as well, something which Port Orford lacks. And other sea-related enterprises are eager to set up in the new facility, too. Out on the dock at the port, James Weimer is tending a collection of large plastic tanks full of water and what appears to be reddish-brown leaves. Turns out he's growing about half a ton of a sea vegetable called dulse.
Dulse is a red algae. It's tasty. Would you like to try a piece?
Sure.
It's crisp with a salty, slightly nutty taste.
It's more nutritious for you than kale. I like the taste, fresh out of the seawater. You can rinse it.
Weimer works for Oregon Sea Farms, which cultures and collects what it calls specialized sea crops, dulse being the newest addition to the company's product line. Oregon Sea Farms is another potential tenant for the new building at the port. Now, remember Tom Calvinese, the biologist who heads OSU's Port Orford Field Station? Well, he's also president of the Port of Port Orford Commission. And he says the port has embraced an economic development vision that goes beyond the commercial fishing fleet to include specialty seafoods, outdoor recreation, science, education, and retail.
We've evolved and expanded our economic portfolio to include the support of these other activities. And we want to see our infrastructure reflect that.
Hence, the need for a new facility that will accommodate it all. The rub, of course, is money. Estimates for the project run as high as $8 million. That's obviously not money the port can raise from the 1,100 residents of Port Orford. Grants from several nonprofit foundations have paid for much of the preliminary analysis and design work, and port officials are in talks with a variety of state and federal agencies to raise the rest. The port has a lot riding on this project. Calvinese calls the port the heart of Port Orford. And he says,
I believe that if we are able to execute the project correctly and successfully, we can actually improve the health of the heart of our town a great deal.
It would be cheaper to just replace the ancient cannery building with a stripped-down facility to house the NorCal operation and call it good. But Calvinese believes the new, more expansive building is a vital part of Port Orford's future. And he says his biology training tells him that trying to retreat into the perceived safety of the past doesn't work.
It's the age-old meme, adapt or die. And that's what you see in the living world around us. It's been going on for eons.
And Calvinese says that leaves him basically optimistic about the future of Port Orford.
If you can apply that principle to a community, to a place like this, I think we're doing it. I think it's happening.
Liam Moriarty, JPR News.
And if you've missed any of Liam's reports out of Port Orford this week, you'll find the whole thing on our webpage, ijpr.org. It is the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Can you remember the last joke someone told you? Did you have a laugh and then promptly forget it? Or did the joke make you maybe think a little and ponder some of life's bigger questions? That's the category of joke we'll be talking about for the rest of this hour. The discussion is prompted by a pair of brothers who are also authors living in the Ashland area. John Javna and Gordon Javna are the co-authors, as simply the Javna brothers, of Life is a Joke, 100 Life's Lessons. Life lessons, rather, with punchlines. This is by no means their first book. John wrote dozens of books on pop culture and the environment. Gordon was publisher and editor-in-chief of Portable Press. Together, they created and maintained the Uncle John's Bathroom Reader series. So, pleasure to have Gordon Javna here. Hi, Gordon.
Hi there.
And John Javna, good to see you.
Hello.
John's been in grumpy mode since the beginning of this project. This is the only radio interview you're doing for this book, is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
We're gratified for that. You guys have told many jokes in previous books, so what was the spark for this one with underlying messages beyond just the jokes themselves?
Well, it started from a conversation that John and I were having. We over coffee, we often talk about book ideas. I know that's most people don't do that, but we do. We have a long history in publishing, so we were talking about it, and John said, you know, I said, I'd like to do a self-help book. And John said, well, I used to tell jokes to my children and use that as a way to teach them a lesson, a life lesson. He said, because if I tell them directly, they don't listen. Mm-hmm. But if it's a punchline of a joke, then they're much more receptive. And I said, you know, I've often thought of jokes as philosophy. So, you know, light bulb went off and we said, oh, maybe this could be the world's first combination self-help book and joke book, and that's how we came up with it.
Here we are, Life as a Joke, 100 Life Lessons with Punchlines. So, John Javna, you have experience with all kinds of jokes. Why do some stick with us and some don't? You're going to play this to the hilt.
What, are you talking to me?
Yes.
Well, you know, what makes jokes funny is that they're true, is when they're true. And what they make you think about, the truth that they make you think about is often one that you just avoid, just as soon avoid, or is said in a way that's a little more direct. And so if you get a joke that really hits some part, you know, that of something you've really been thinking about, it's an easy way to come back to it and encapsulate it. You know, it's that last it's the punchline. You go, oh, yeah.
Yeah, you're laughing because, gee, that really has happened to me, or I've thought that sort of thing, or, you know, I jumped out the window like that, whatever the story may be.
Well, you know, when we came up with this idea, we thought it's an odd combination, an odd way to tell a life lesson. But the truth of the matter is that a joke is a little story. At least the jokes in this book are story jokes. There's no
knock-knock
one-liners
jokes, yeah.
Or riddles or that kind of thing. But they are little stories. They have characters, and they have plots. And if it's well told, they have a twisty ending, which turns into a great life lesson, a great way to remember a life lesson as well.
Given the vast realm of jokes out there in the world, I mean, how long did it take to whittle the list down to just 100?
No, we spent a year collecting these jokes, and they're all classic jokes. We didn't, you know, invent any new jokes, but we went through our own resume of everybody's got a few, you know, jokes that they've told over and over again, and we went through our own resume, and they had to fit into the mold. That is, they had to have a punchline, and they had to be not dirty, and so on. And when we ran out, we started asking friends and family for jokes, and by the time we knew, we had way too many, and we had to start whittling down.
All right, I'll ask. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that. Well, I forgot what I was going to say. No, no. The hard part of this was we'd tell a joke, we'd think it was funny, and then we'd say, okay, but what's the life lesson? And that was really, you know, figuring out the sort of the jump between a joke and a life lesson was pretty much all the art of this book. You know, figuring out, well, what does it say? But we were surprised, actually, at some point. You know, we'd start saying punchlines to ourselves about things that were happening. Oh yeah, so that joke, and so we knew that it would work because it was sticking with us.
And you do explore, you know, the meaning of each joke, but you don't beat it to death either. I mean, you're pretty much done with, you know, setup, joke, life lesson in about 3 or 4 pages at a maximum, right?
Yeah, and the format for the book is, as you say, the joke, and then we have the life lesson. And then we have what we call Beyond the Punchline, which is little tips that we've researched on how you can implement some of these lessons and things to take away from you, with you.
Did you bring in psychologists or anybody else to help round out some of the expertise that you're offering in the book?
Well, we've got friends who are psychologists, and we'd ask them. But, you know, the people who are the best people to ask are joke mavens. Uh-huh. You know, there are people we know just about every joke, and we say, how about this one? But, you know, when we were doing it, I know for myself, I would think, okay, is this something I could tell my daughter Sophie and pass on some fatherly wisdom or something? You know, would she listen to me? And that was sort of the litmus test for me. Gordon's had a slightly different view, and we combined them.
Yeah, my point of view was, it's just something I would tell myself.
The book is called Life is a Joke, 100 Life Lessons with Punchlines. The Javner brothers are listed as the authors. We have the Javner brothers broken up individually here. Not broken up yet. Gordon Javner and John Javner here in the exchange. You got a joke you want to share and a life lesson you've learned from it? 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So let's start with number one, the old joke about the two pirates here.
Okay, so the two pirates sharing war stories and going over battle scars. And one says to the other, "So how'd you get that metal hook for a hand?" And the other guy says, "Well, we were ransacking a ship off of Haiti, and the captain of the other ship and I got into hand-to-hand combat, and he sliced my hand off with his sword." And the other pirate goes, "Oh, that's terrible. Well, let me ask you this. How'd you get your peg leg?" He says, "Well, I was down in the Bahamas, and we were trying to take over a ship, and the captain and I got into hand-to-hand combat, and he sliced off my leg with his sword." And the other pirate says, "Well, that's interesting, but let me ask you this. How'd you get that patch over your eye?" And the first pirate says, "Well, I was walking on the deck one day when a bird crapped in my eye." He goes, "That's how you got your eye patch?" He goes, "Well, it was me first day with the hook."
That's a good one. But the serious turn here is about forming new habits. And so what did you guys come up with in your research about that?
Well, nobody adjusts to new habits instantly.
Nobody gets used to the new hook right away.
Yeah, right. You know, it takes time to get used to any new conditions, and you're bound to make some mistakes. But you don't have to be the guy with the hook. You know, if you recognize changes when they're happening, you can limit your mistakes and develop new habits to go along with new conditions. And so then the interesting thing for us was then to look into, well, okay, it's one thing to just sort of throw that out, you know, and then we did some research. And then we've included in this thing is also some really short but I think pithy tips about how to start new habits. You know, we did a lot of research for every joke. After we supply the life lesson, we also have details about how to get started doing it. So that's what makes it a real self-help book and not just a humor book.
And there are a few in here. I mean, literally in the self-help column here about being honest with ourselves. So I'll give you a choice because there's two that really work well for you. The 80-year-old guy with the pregnant wife or the guy who's convinced he's dead. Both of those deal with being honest with yourselves. Your choice, Gordon.
I like the story about the guy who thinks he's dead, and that's how it opens up. There's a guy, he's convinced he's dead, and his children tell him no, he's not dead, and his wife tells him no, he's not dead, but they finally convince him to see a psychiatrist, and the psychiatrist takes an interesting approach. He said has the man read about physical anatomy and read about the blood system, and he takes him to watch autopsies and inspect cadavers, and finally after months the guy says to him, "Well, I guess it's true, dead men don't bleed." I think I left out that part of the beginning, didn't I? I think I told it. It's early. And these guys are less. You guys are staring at me like, "Oh, let's see you get out of this one." I left that out of the joke. Okay, that was what he was convinced of. He thinks he's dead, and his thing is that dead men don't bleed. Let's move on to another joke because I'm just swimming in this now.
Dead men do bleed.
I can't remember what you missed on that thing, but the guy is the guy. the guy who takes it on is going to prove to the guy that that dead men do bleed. And he said, if he focuses his entire thing on that, then that's what's going to convince him. So he so I can't remember. You just talked the details.
Well,
Let's move on to the joke, but
he takes him to he shows him cadavers, and finally the man is convinced that dead men don't bleed. And whereupon the psychiatrist takes his hand and pricks the tip of his finger with a pin, and he sees a drop of blood oozing out of his finger, and the man says, "Well, I guess it's true. Dead men do bleed."
So what was cool about that, you know, our editor immediately said, hey, this is about politics. You know, today's politics, because people are so polarized, you think you can convince people with facts and logic, but this joke sort of illustrates that you can't. We did a little research and found something called the backfire effect, which they've done studies that show that basically you cannot convince people, even with facts. If they believe strongly in something, people are just not going to come around to it, to change their minds. And they've done brain scans, and they've seen that people's brains light up in certain ways. If they hear something they agree with, then the part of them that gets information lights up. But then if they hear something they don't agree with, then the part of the brain lights up that basically turns things into defensiveness. And they've done studies enough so that they know that basically if you think you're going to argue with somebody and convince them with facts, you're wrong. They're going to backfire. They're going to get more involved in what they believed in to begin with. There's only a couple of instances in which you can really work with people to get them to change their minds.
So is there a joke that indicates how you get in under that radar? I mean, other than telling jokes to try to change somebody's mind about
something? Well, the way you get under the radar is you – there are three ways that people might change their minds. One is if they have some skin in the game and they think they're going to lose something if they don't weigh it. Another is if there's a group decision, if people if people make a decision together. And then if you ask people to explain how what they're talking about is true, rather than what they believe or why do they believe it, but just how is it true?
John Javna and Gordon Javna are guests on the Jefferson Exchange. The Javna brothers on the front of their book, Life is a Joke, 100 Life Lessons with Punchlines. Boy, where do we go here? There's just so much.
Well, I'll tell you another joke.
Go ahead, Gordon.
I have to make up for the bad telling of the previous joke.
So, I like your punchline. It's early.
It's early. Well, you should have seen your face. It's all red. And like, oh, my God, where's he coming with? Okay, so this is one of our favorites from the book. A guy is walking down a country road. And he comes upon a farmhouse, and out in front of the farmhouse, there's the farmer standing, and next to the farmer is a pig with a wooden leg. And the guy says, "Good morning, nice pig you got there." And the farmer says, "Nice pig?" Said, "This is a great pig. This pig is so, I'll tell you how great this pig is. A couple of years ago, I was in the barn, and a giant bale of hay fell off the loft and fell on top of me and crushed me, nearly suffocated me. But this pig ran in and grabbed me by the foot and dragged me to safety. Saved my life." The man says, "That's amazing." He goes, "Amazing? I'll tell you, amazing. Last year my house caught fire. This pig ran in and saved my two kids, pulled them out to safety, saved their lives." The man says, "That is incredible, but I have to ask you, what's with the wooden leg?" And the farmer says, "Well, with a pig that special, you don't eat them all at once."
I've loved that one for a long time. So what's the life lesson you guys were able to distill from that?
Well, the life lesson from that is that we like to believe that people appreciate us when we do something nice for them. Sometimes that's true. People do say thank you and they do mean it. But sometimes people are unable to express gratitude, and other times they may appreciate you on some level, but they really just see you as a resource to exploit. And we've all have been in this situation at work or in our personal relationships. And if you're not careful, you, like the farmer, will find yourself being eaten piece by piece, unless you have...
Like the pig, anyway.
Like the pig. Well, the farmer's the eater. Someone's going to eat you piece by piece, unless you have the good sense to get yourself out of that situation. In other words, you don't have to be the pig.
There's another one along similar lines about the importance of saying thank you with the efficiency expert. We'll save that for another day. I want to get to the wrong way driver story, because this one had me laughing out loud, and I had to explain it to the people in the newsroom. Do you remember that one? John's wrinkling his brow.
Yeah, I remember it. So, yeah, I can't remember what page it's on, so let's see if I can tell it. So, guy's driving down the street, and he gets a phone call. It's his wife. She says, Herman, I just listened to the news and there's some maniacs driving the wrong way down the freeway. I want to make sure you're okay. Are you okay? He goes, yeah, I'm okay, but it's not just one guy driving down. It's hundreds of guys driving the wrong way.
I do like that one. So what's the life lesson you got from that one?
Well, you know, sometimes, you know, we have a tendency to think that it's better to be independent and go your own way. But sometimes you're going your own way and you notice that everybody's going the other way. And it makes sense sometimes to consider whether or not you really want to be doing things your way. Or maybe you're going the wrong way because it's the wrong way and you need to make some changes.
Yeah, in business they call that best practices because it does make sense to follow the way everybody else is doing it sometimes.
Yeah, so, you know, there's a balance between independence and being creative and actually doing things the right way. Sometimes it's better to put your resources into going along with everyone else and save them for a time when it makes sense.
Listen, we got time for maybe one more joke. So why don't we go for how about the old man and the cookies? Can you tell that one in about a minute?
And that's a long joke. Pick a shorter one.
Young man, yeah, monk in the monastery, that's too long, too. Let's see. A cab driver.
Hey, how about let Gordon pick a joke?
Okay.
Wait a second. I have to pick one that I can read because...
Because it's too early.
Wait. Okay. Give me one second here. I like the joke about... and I heard this joke. This was being told by Myron Cohen on the Ed Sullivan Show in the 1960s. So an old woman, a grandmother, is on the beach with her grandson. And all of a sudden, a wave sweeps in and drags the grandson out into the ocean. And the woman falls down to her knees and looks up at the sky and says, oh, God, please bring my grandson back. I'll do anything if you just bring my grandson back. Whereupon another wave comes in and deposits the grandson right at her feet. And she looks at the grandson, she looks up at the sky, and she says, he had a hat.
So another lesson in gratitude there.
There you go.
So is there a second 100 ready to go for another book?
You know, one of the things we learned in when we started is don't think about the sequel. Just think about the one you're working on.
All right.
We just finished this one. Here we are. Jeffrey, it's nice to see you again.
Same here. John Javna, Gordon Javna. Life as a Joke, 100 Life Lessons with Punchlines. Great to have you back in the studio.
Thank you. Nice to be with you.